mia bella Napoli, addio, addio, la tua soave immagine.
Ciao ragazzi and benvenuti to the 46th episode of In the Shadow of Vesuvio. My name is Henry Bell. I am speaking to you from the glorious west of Scotland, where the sky is blue, spring is in the air. I'm looking at an equally springy situation. I can see the face of Michele Borelli and his wallpaper of Mario Rui's head on the Serie A trophy. It's a bizarre but very pleasurable sight. And what better way to introduce you, Michele, than that? How are you? How is Naples? How is the shadow of Vesuvio?
Ciao Harry, ciao bello, ciao everyone. Yeah, it's very nice. Winter hasn't arrived in Napoli at all. Like I feel like we had like 3 days of winter this year. Probably like somewhere in January. Like the winter in our hearts, brought by Napoli and Mazzarri, has lasted way longer than the actual physical winter that we've experienced temperature-wise. So yeah, but it's quite fun. It's chilly, I would say. It's not hot, but it's chilly. And when it's sunny, it's
not. I bet it's not. What are we talking? Perfect. What are we talking temperature-wise?
We're talking today, I think, between like 18 and 20 degrees, probably. Like even probably 16. It depends.
Oh my god.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. It's perfect.
And for our North American listeners, to apologize, you'll have to do the maths. Or the math, sorry, as you would say, yourself, to put that into the other one. Yeah, it's about 8 over here, and we're sort of enjoying that, thinking that's temperate. That's a temperate climate. Anyway, right. Napoli, we're quite good again.
Napoli's back, is it? I don't know.
I'm afraid
to say this. I don't know. Like honestly, like I've been, like I will tell you, I've gone completely crazy this season. So I'm not sure. Yeah, no, I'm completely like it's honestly like I don't even care about making sense anymore. So whatever happens, like I think I mentioned it in the podcast, but after I would say at sometime in December, I gave up on the season at all, like whatsoever. Like, I don't care about it anymore. So now, whatever happens, you know, I let myself be, you know, managed. And
take it
moved.
On a wave. Like, you're in the sea over in Bagnoli or wherever you are, and you're
exactly.
letting the waves just carry you towards that beach.
100%. You know, if I feel something, I will not fight it. I will not argue with it. I will just let it move me wherever he wants me to move, like a leaf in the wind. So now I feel optimistic because Calzona is here and Mazzarri has left. From day one, Calzona arrived. I've been labeling myself as a Calzona lover, 100%. I don't care. I don't care.
I love, I know it's we shouldn't be so knee-jerk, but I love everything about him. I like just how he looks, how he stands, how he talks, how he commands I even like how he walks out of the tunnel. And I think maybe this is because we've basically just been like the equivalent of people that have been trapped in a cupboard for 6 months and we've just been allowed outside. But just feels right, doesn't it? Anyway, we'll go into more detail about this in a bit, but I am totally with you on that, Michele. But before we speak, maybe for the first time this season in excited tones about our club, what is number 46 on the Napoli Tombola?
Number 46 is money, I soldi e denaro, which is an interesting number, I would say. It's very flexible. You can use it in a lot of stories, you know, when you pick your tombola numbers. And yeah, money always matters. There are always talks about money, especially when it comes to, you know, De Laurentiis words. You know, we have problems with the stadium that has to be renewed to participate to the Euros competition. We have talks about, you know, problems with Kvaratskhelia wanting more money, Osimhen leaving for a lot of money. Yeah, money, you know, like it's not going to be that episode, even though a lot of people have reached out to me and told me that they've appreciated our Like they appreciate it when we talk about the managerial aspects of Napoli.
What, people like our show?
I don't know about that.
I fight the
I might
odds,
have
but
paid them to say that, but
yeah.
it's interesting. I love to talk about this stuff too. But not today. Today
It's
we
a
get
joyful day.
excited. Yeah, today is very much Napoli spring. So yes.
Indeed. Primavera. Look at my Italian, just coming on, leaps and bounds.
Beautiful.
We'll be doing the show in Italian in a few weeks, I'm sure. So we usually have a little Dan Bowen, skip forward. We do like to talk about food, and it feels like with our new mister, I have to ask you where you stand on, calzone. Are you a fan? What is your favorite? Do you go for the folded option with pizza, or do you tend to avoid it?
I can say that I never had a calzone in my entire life, actually, not even once. I can't remember having it once. I would never order
Okay.
it. I don't know. Like we have so many choices. I don't. It's not. I'm not against it, but it doesn't look appealing to me. I don't know. It's just like I like. It's very. I don't know, man. It's just I love margherita. I love sauce on top of the pizza. It doesn't look very appealing to me.
It looks like a Cornish pasty.
Yeah.
Did
It
you have
does.
when you were in the UK, did you have a Cornish pasty?
No, I don't think
So,
so.
do you know what one is? It looks like it's like a small version of a calzone, and it's got like meat and potatoes in it, and it was made, it actually goes back hundreds of years for Cornish miners. So they go into the mine and they'd have to take their lunch, and it was folded over and it stayed warm all day, and they ate it. So I think a lot of British people, when they go to an Italian restaurant, they want a pizza. They won't go for a calzone because they're like, this looks like a pasty, mate. But I quite like it. So, I mean, in Naples, people, would you say, don't tend to go that way? They don't fold it over.
I can say that it's very rare to see people here ordering a calzone. I can't remember. I'm trying to remember if any of my friends ever order a calzone. I don't think so. Again, it's not really like, it's not that people hate it. It's just that you have so many options here that calzone is not really one of the top ones, I would
And
say.
of course, that's the singular. So again, in Britain, on a menu, it's a bit like panini is used in quite an irritating way. If you were to ask for a panino over here, they'd think, "Oh, you're being pretentious." But equally, I think if you say, "I want a calzona," they'd be like, "Do you mean a calzone?"
No, calzone is singular, calzoni is plural. Calzona is actually not a word in Italian.
Right, there we go.
So calzona is
I mean, I knew that.
only.
I was just pretending I didn't for the
Oh, of course. Yeah,
listeners.
no, I mean, it's, yeah. Test passed 100%.
So we're going to need some kind of thing. So, like, if we beat Barcelona next week, I think you should eat a calzone.
I might actually do that. If we
And
do,
I want evidence.
yes, I will send evidence. Yes.
Oh, in fact, listen, let's all do it. Come on, everybody, all millions of you. I want
Yeah,
our timeline
billions.
full,
We
billions
lost
of.
we lost listeners. I thought we were in the billions.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I got to work on that. Let's do it. If we beat Barcelona, I just at Shadow of Vesuvio, just at us with a picture of you eating a calzone, and we're gonna spread the love. Because as we said, I mean, I think we were talking before we started recording about. I mean, I get a bit sentimental, which is probably why I'm a good Napoli fan. I get very sentimental about the past. I'm very interested in the past, always trying to find stuff like Footballia, the website, have uploaded a friendly from 1982 that has Ruud Krol playing. So I've never seen Ruud Krol actually play a whole match. I've watched it. It's brilliant. It's an artificial pitch, and he's at the back just pinging passes around like a quarterback. Beautiful. Like, obviously, what an amazing player. And you can really understand why he's thought of so fondly in the city. So quite sensible. I like the idea of genealogy, like the family tree of Naples. And so, like, the bit of me that likes Zelensky is the idea that he's connected to the past, and he's connected to Hamsik and all that kind of stuff. But now he can get in the bin. So what I love about this appointment is the kind of genealogy of it, that you can see so much Maurizio Sarri and just how he is tactically and all that kind of stuff. And you can see the fun bits of Spalletti in there. And then there's the connection to Slovakia and the connection to Hamsik and the connection to Lobotka. Like, these are all our favorite people, really, aren't they? Am I alone in thinking this sort of thing, or have people been getting a bit misty-eyed and sentimental about the past with his appointment, clearly?
I think I was surprised to learn that some people don't even know that he's part of Napoli's past. Like, some people have no idea that he was Sarri's second when Sarri was here, and they don't know that he was also Spalletti's second when Spalletti came here. Only for the first year, not the second. So in the second, we have the legend Domenichini on the bench. But yeah, no, it's been like he was, as far as I remember, he was Sarri's. Was Sarri's vice coach
Yeah,
or
he was the assistant to Sarri, and he was a technical coach with Spalletti's first season, I think.
right? Yeah, but he's been with Sarri for the whole 3 years he was here,
Yep. And
which
didn't he
is
go with him to Chelsea as well? I think, I can't remember, but I think
that
he's
I can
assisted
remember.
Sarri a few times, I think.
Yeah,
Maybe
so
before.
that's a big deal, you know. And it's, you can tell, like, it's every time I watch him, just like on body language. The way he talks to the press, maybe he's a bit smarter than Sarri when it comes to talking to the press. Sarri was a little bit too raw. He's a little bit more media trained, maybe. But like, you can tell, like, Sarri was called Comandante, the commander in Napoli. And you have the same vibe when you watch Calzona, the commander. Again, I don't want to, I don't want to praise, the leader. I don't want to praise the man in charge and stuff. But I mean, it's, he's literally the man in charge. So, and I will praise him because this is football and I don't need to be rational about this. So, yes, I love him. I'm very happy that he's here. Even before we started playing, I was happy that he came. And, by watching Napoli, even though we are far from perfect, very far from perfect, and we are definitely not at the same level as last season, and maybe we never will be, but at least in the near future will not get as good as last season. But I've seen some progress. I will say that we are probably performing above, actually below our level this season. Last season we performed above our level, and now we are reaching normal, like, normalcy again. We are
Equilibrium has been reached, I think.
exactly,
Yeah, I
but I
agree. And I,
think,
yeah.
yeah, it's a complicated situation because he doesn't have time at all. I do remember that Sarri, when Sarri came, we struggled for the, like, I mean, first of all, Sarri had a lot of, like the whole summer to train the team. And, Sarri is famous for requiring time when he joins the team. He requires that he needs some time to, make the players adapt to his style and, get into
Get
the players' minds.
those drones up in the sky on the training pitch and get those reports. Yeah, I mean,
Exactly.
we talked about it before, but like famously Maradona came out speaking against Sarri. There were quite a lot of public dissent. But interesting with Calzone, it's crazy because he's only still slightly less than 2 weeks, maybe almost exactly 2 weeks now. I've been so busy at work that time has gone. No, it's 2 weeks and 2 days. So like, it's such a short period of time.
Yeah, it
And
feels
actually,
longer.
it really feels longer, actually, which again is part, I think, of his presence, of the calm he's brought, of the stability he's brought. He's also brought back the fitness coach as well, if I got that right, that we used to
Yeah,
have.
I don't think it's linked to him. I think De Laurentiis was very open. I don't know if I can remember if we talked about this, but De Laurentiis talked about this physical coach a couple of times this season. Basically, the story is that when Garcia joined, he brought his own physical trainer, physical coach, and I mean, De Laurentiis wasn't against it because I mean, you tend to accept the stuff that the new head coach brings to the team. But he really liked Sinatti, which is the name of the physical coach that we had with Spalletti, with whom we won the Scudetto. Basically, he went to Sinatti and said, "Look, I still want you here." This is De Laurentiis. He said, "I still want you here, but we're gonna bring in another one." And Sinatti said, "I don't want to share my responsibilities with him. I was perfectly fine on my own. I don't want to work with another guy." And he said, "No, but you're not gonna be, his employee. You're not gonna be like he's gonna. It's not gonna be your boss. You're gonna work together." And basically, Sinatti rejected this. He left. And it's been one of De Laurentiis' biggest regrets, according to De Laurentiis, he said so himself. So at the first occasion he had now Sinatti now is with Spalletti with the national team, so it's basically I think it's a similar deal that we have with Calzona that is obviously Slovakia's coach. So he's still working with the national team, but he's also working with us now. So yeah, De Laurentiis the first occasion he had he brought him back, and yeah, that says a lot, I would say. De Laurentiis, I hate him. I don't want to say I hate him, but
I don't think that's a surprise to anyone that's listened to
yeah, I
more
mean, no,
than
but no, but
the past 10 minutes of this show.
look, I don't want to say I hate him because hate is kind of like an irrational sentiment, irrational feeling. Like what I feel towards him is not irrational, and it's proved by the fact that I was about to say that even though he has many, many, many flaws, one of his, to his credit, when he makes some mistakes, he tries to fix it. So it's like, even though he usually doesn't even do it, but he addresses the mistake, he recognizes the mistake, and he tries to fix it. Usually he tries to fix it with another mistake, but that's a different issue. But I can appreciate the fact that he recognizes his mistakes and he tries to fix them. So he tries
Which
to
he's
fix
done,
the
yeah.
Sinatti mistake. So that's, I
And also
appreciate that.
the Mister, as well, I mean, I think I'm trying to just forget the 4 months of Matsari just for a variety of reasons. Because I think, as we talked about when Matsari was rehired, I have such fond memories of his first tenure. Like, it was just glorious. I think for a lot of us who are perhaps outside of Naples, who found it hard to see Napoli in Serie B and Serie C, and there's sort of the TV rights for Serie A back then were a little bit all over the place, so it was quite hard to see the club. And then that Mazzari's side really coincided with us really being able to watch them every week properly and in detail. And then obviously all those wonderful players and that first Coppa d'Italia. And I want to remember that. I don't want to remember the awfulness. I mean, he was so bad. I mean, I think objectively it was worse than what Rudy Garcia was doing. I think our emotions, wanted him to not be as bad as that, but they were both appalling. And I think what's interesting about Calzona coming in is how quickly he seems to have turned things around. I think we're not going to talk about the games that we've missed. We can talk about Juve properly, but just to go back to that point about Sarri, in some ways, what was really interesting about the Barcelona game, I thought, was that in one game, was a kind of microcosm of Sarri's first 6 weeks. Was it 6 weeks? I can't remember now. We talked about this before. There was a game in Europe, wasn't there, when Sarri turned it around, I think. But like the beginning of the Barcelona match was, I think, the worst I've seen Napoli play this season. In terms of, it was just such a mess. And I was like, oh my God, this is going to be like 7-0. And then gradually it got better within the game. And the last, I think 15, 20 minutes were absolutely fantastic. What I thought was really interesting, to the kind of Sarri parallels, is that that's exactly what it was like with Sarri, but just over a longer period of time,
Yeah,
They're
no, I agree.
connected.
I agree. I agree. It was an interesting game. We usually are very timid and we worry a lot. We're scared when we play big names in Europe. That's almost always been the case. Ironically, I can remember that with Sarri, when we first qualified for Champions League, we didn't have this approach. So we didn't lose. I mean, we lost against Bayern Munich in Munich, but we didn't lose against them at home. We eliminated Manchester City from the Champions League and we won against Chelsea. We lost, the return leg, but we still
Let's
won
not talk about that.
3-1.
I only ever
Yeah, no,
think
that
about
never
that
happened.
first leg. Yeah.
Never happened. But yeah, no, that's the team we all loved, at least the people who can remember it. Everyone loved the approach that team had. It was an approach that didn't really care about, oh yeah, your name. Who are you again? We don't care. We're gonna play like we know. And it was like a
Play
lot of
our
heart, a
game.
lot of courage. Yeah. Even
Yeah.
though we didn't have the most spectacular football in the world, but we also had didn't have the best players in the world. You know, we played against Bayern Munich, Manchester City, Chelsea with Aronica as a starter, with Paolo Cannavaro,
Salvatore, my
Salvatore,
hero. You know,
Salvatore
whenever I saw
Aronica.
him on the pitch, I thought, you know, as I was a slightly younger man, I thought there's still hope for me. If
Yes.
this guy could be on the pitch, then they're gonna call me. So I think, you know, the Cagliari game was a bit of a, it was again not the best. Obviously, Sassuolo are really bad at football,
Yeah.
really bad at football, but wonderful to see Osimhen score a hat trick, and particularly Kvaratskhelia being back, and then obviously the Juve result the weekend. And I know other podcasts have been through the game, but what I'm really interested in, and I'm sure our listeners are, is what you've seen in the stadium from Cordoba B that seems different in this side. Like, how much is this a mentality thing? How much of it are you seeing actual changes? I'm particularly interested in Lobotka, I think, because I know you're a Lobotka watcher like me. And obviously there's that connection with Kazorna being the Slovakia manager. What are you noticing? That, and also, like, also, how are the players after the game? Like, are you noticing the way they're coming over to the Cordoba? Is there a slightly different body language? Just what's the Cordoba B perspective in terms of what you're seeing in front of you in this new Napoli side?
Yeah, I would say that it was, I mean, it was an exciting game. It was very exciting. We had a lot of fun. I would say I wasn't too much of a Lobotka watcher against Juventus. I would surprise you, but I was a Traoré watcher. I was watching Traoré a lot, and I might have a controversial opinion about this because I've heard like he made a lot of mistakes against Juventus. The thing is, he made a lot of mistakes while playing near Curva A, and I mean Curva B. Mostly played in the first half, and the first half, so I could see very well the attacking phase, the defensive phase. I couldn't tell, but I was looking at the attacking phase, and that was very interesting. I would say that
Right.
I was very surprised by Traoré. That game, it was a beautiful
Sorry,
performance,
can I
attacking.
just chip in from the sofa perspective, Michele? Because I was doing some
The
emotional tweeting.
plastic
The
perspective.
plastic, yeah, exactly. Wow, I think this is the longest it's taken you in a Australia to call me. You can tell times are good.
Yeah.
I was quite emotionally against Traore on Twitter, and I feel increasingly stupid about that, because I think he made a lot of mistakes because he was trying a lot of things. And we've sort of missed that in midfield. You know what I mean? That kind of trying to make things happen. And we need somebody in that. Particularly if we're going to play three in midfield, we need someone who's going to try stuff out. So I'm interested in this perspective, actually. So do you think he might, do you have some confidence that he might integrate better into the team, do you think, perhaps?
You know, it's very difficult because there are a lot of factors, a lot of elements that come into play when a player needs like can become successful. So skill is just one of the elements, but it's not even probably the most important one. You know, you can look at players like Balotelli, for example, or like even Cassano. I mean, they won trophies and stuff, but their skill, like on a pure skill level, they were probably among the best in the world, but they didn't have a very long or amazing career. They had a good career, but not an amazing career. So I've seen, like, in terms of skill, like what I was surprised by regarding Traoré is that the feet I had the feeling that every time he had the ball at his feet, something was about to happen. Again, I'm talking about the attacking phase, because the defensive phase, again, I couldn't tell. And then I've watched the highlights and he made some very stupid mistakes. But I also want to say that as a team, we made a lot of stupid mistakes, especially in the defensive phase against Juventus. You can tell that this is still a very confused team when it comes to some like even tactical elements of the game. But yeah, no, I really loved, like, I was surprised by Traoré. It's the first time I watched him closely, and it was great that every time he had the ball, this is the feeling I got, and it was surprising because when I was clearly thinking, oh wow, he's playing like he's gonna be the man of the match. And then I watched what I opened WhatsApp and my friends were like, oh, this is like Tariq, go away. I want you to be subbed out. I was very surprised by this. And again, it's not rare in the stadium because in the stadium you cannot see everything. Some things you see very well and some things so better than from television, but
But you're
some
looking
things you
at it from a
see
different
worse.
perspective, though, aren't you? Because I suppose on TV we're zoomed out and we're looking at the stats and we're looking at the kind of success. But actually, there's something about sort of spiritual dynamic of a player in a team that you can pick up in a stadium that you can't actually when you're a plastic at home. And I think, we've been on the show complaining about Garcia and Mazzari's sort of passivity as a team, and I think the mistake making is obviously annoying, but again, to look at that optimistically, it's more active, it's more, you know what I mean, that you're sort of trying things. And I think particularly in that midfield, I've really disliked the midfield shape of Garcia. It's very flat, and I also really didn't like what Mazzari was doing on midfield with just how defensive it was, how passive it was, how much sideways there was, how they were really a screen for a three-man defense sometimes. And I think that's perhaps the thing that we're picking up on with the midfield is that there's just much more drive. On Guissat as well, he's so hard to predict what's going to happen, seems to be more comfortable in this team too.
No, I would say the main difference I saw between this Napoli and Mazzarri's Napoli, again, we're comparing maybe the worst Napoli we've had in the past 15 years to anything else, to be honest, would be an improvement. But what I've started to see again is it was very clear to me. I was commenting while watching the game, I was commenting with some friends next to me that finally, like, it was clear to me that we started to do the triangles again. If you remember that, that was something that we used to do with Sarri. So what I noticed is that every time we had the ball, the player with the ball at his feet had a lot of, well, not a lot, but at least a couple of passing options, which is something they trained very hard on with Sarri. So this concept of having these triangles, which is, like you have the ball at your feet and you have two passing opportunities, and so you can form this triangle, and you can quickly progress the ball towards the opponent's box because you can always have someone you can pass the ball to. And this is something that is still not perfect, but it clearly they trained for that and they clearly improved on this.
And
And this.
I saw that from the sofa. And it's in the whole triangle. That's a brief thing. I find it so interesting with triangles because lots of different people try to trace the origins of that. So obviously, you've got the René Michels Dutch team of the 70s with Cruyff and stuff, and that goes back actually more to Ernst Happel, who's an Austrian coach. But some people say it has its origins in basketball. The famous Michael Jordan side had a lot of that stuff. I don't know anything about basketball. And some people say that Guardiola, when he was at Barcelona, have a big handball team, that actually triangles are really important in handball. So it's really interesting how there's a kind of trans sport application of this sort of thing, which is actually about having options, isn't it? And having options, and then you need players that then understand and can live within that to be able to make the right choice. And perhaps what we're seeing is that they haven't quite had enough time on the training pitch to have that sort of decision making, in sort of drilled into them. Although the game coming up will be the longest that Calzona has had with them on the because he's had a week now, hasn't he, with them? And he hadn't had that because he had 4 games in 2 weeks. That's really interesting. Come on, tell me about Kvara. So what have you seen? He just looks completely transformed to me from the sofa, but from you in the stadium.
No, it does. It does. But then again, like playing like this, it kind of starts a positive cycle because if you have a lot of passing options, then it means that you're not going to take big risks because if you have passing options, you're going to take them. And that usually converts to a successful pass. And, you don't take risks, you make fewer mistakes, which also leads to bigger, like, increased confidence. And then if your confidence increases, then you are able to, even think about different plays, even riskier plays, but then
Mm.
you know when you when they when they are successful, they are beautiful. And yeah, I think probably this is what Kvara has benefited from.
That's so interesting because it's the thing that I was thinking is that, you know, this season he's actually not had a terrible season. If you look at his numbers, like he's scored 9 goals, got 5 or 6 assists. Has had some brilliant moments, just been struggled to consistently match it. I think because he felt an enormous sense of individual responsibility. And it's really interesting what you're saying that actually tactically on the pitch are all these options. So that's going to come across, isn't it? The psychology of that's massive for someone like Kvaratskhelia, who's thinking it's not actually all on me because I can see there's three or four different things that can happen here. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and
And
also I
yeah.
think he benefited from Traoré. That was one of the reasons they played on the they played on the same side, yeah, on the left. And it was great to see. I think they play they speak the same language when it comes to football. That's something I love. I could tell that they were at ease with each other, and they could kind of talk, you know, football talk. That was interesting for me to see. And yeah, I mean, it's exciting to think that we can only go up from here. And yeah, we made a lot of mistakes, but
Oh, and
it's.
actually, sorry, but that's very interesting, that left-hand side thing, because that's in the DNA of Napoli. That goes right the way back,
That's true. I don't know
almost
if it's
to Maradona, actually, because when you had Magica, you had, you know, Careca, who was kind of a centre forward, but not really. Maradona would often float left. You had the Sarri, and then you had Francini bombing it up from fullback, and that was really interesting, that kind of left side. Then in you had Zuniga, right, and Hamsik. You know, that was a great relationship that develops into Sarri with the beautiful Ghoulam, Hamsik, Insigne trio. And there was a brief period where that was just the best thing you could. I think it was the 2016-2017 season, just before Ghoulam, maybe the beginning of 2017-2018, just before Ghoulam got that terrible injury. That way that there was a source of leaning to the left with Napoli is something that, as someone that's watched a lot of Napoli from the sofa, is there. It's weird. I don't quite know why. And that's how you get people like Callejon who can drift in at that far post, because you leave those gaps that people can sort of exploit. So the idea that we're not comparing Traoré to Marek Hamsik, I think we've made that very clear.
Yes.
But that's fascinating to think of that left-sided thing as sort of coming back, and that Calzona's got that in him because of his tutelage under Maurizio Sarri. I love
Yeah.
this.
It's even, I think it's part of it is also just a coincidence too, because we, you know, Kvaratskhelia has way more skill, is way more technical than Politano, for example, which is on the right. Anguissa, especially this season, has been very, I don't know, bland. I would say even against Juventus, he didn't impress me at all. He still improved, but he didn't really impress me. It happened to me like I by chance I watched some highlights from last season, and I didn't realize because I didn't click on this video, but I realized after a few seconds that it was a last season game because I was looking at Anguissa doing things that this season he's never done. Like, he was way more active, was running and stuff. I was like, oh, wait, what's going on? And then I watched the title of the video, and it was a last season highlight video. And I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And also, Di Lorenzo has not been that great this season.
Must
Has
be
not.
tired. If you just look at the
Yeah, I
minutes he's
guess.
played, he hasn't had a break. And he
Yeah,
hasn't had a
fair.
mental break either. Like captaining Napoli to a scudetto, that's hard. There's a lot of, you're carrying a lot of stuff there. And yeah, there's been no, again, due to squad mismanagement, there's been no way that he can be rested, I think. I'll always stand up for him. Did you see those videos? What was that thing actually of him driving around Naples being interviewed?
Yeah, I watched half of it.
So
I
what was
watched
that?
the
Is
other
that
half.
like a regular show that exists, or is
Yeah, I
it
think
what?
no, I think Napoli, just on Napoli's social media, they started to do this. I think it's the first episode of Driving with the Players, and yeah, they're gonna release more. It was interesting, but I didn't watch all of it yet.
So he was talking about Via Manzoni, right? And it was all spoken about how like everybody has to experience this at some point in their life. So like, why would somebody say that? So for our listeners that perhaps don't know Naples quite as well as others, what is it about that street that gets people excited about driving down it? I mean, you presumably do that a lot on your scooter and all that.
I mean, it's not specifically about Via Manzoni, but there are a few streets in Napoli, especially in Posillipo, where they're quite, they are on the Posillipo Hill, so it's quite a few of them, but they are very panoramic because they're on the hill and they face the Vesuvius. So they face like southeast, south. So it's quite nice because, it's basically, if you Google Napoli and you look at Google Images of Napoli, you most likely will see pictures taken from the Posillipo Hill. Because you can see, the whole like the arch of the Lungomare with the Castel dell'Ovo. You can see the Vesuvius. In that picture, there is always me because I live right next to the Vesuvius. So every time you see a picture of Napoli with the Vesuvius, you're actually looking at the picture of
In
myself.
the shadow of Vesuvius.
Exactly. So yeah, that's why it's probably one of the most appreciated views in Napoli because it's the stereotypical Napoli panorama. With the
Lovely.
Vesuvius in the background, with the golf, with everything else, and with me, clearly, with me.
And that's the main reason for me. Like, I'm always trying to see, through the window to see you. But I think, it was interesting seeing, Giovanni Di Lorenzo, I think Patrick Kendrick, the Serie A commentator, who I believe sometimes listens to this show. If you are Patrick, we think you're really good. Well, I do anyway. I'm sure Michele doesn't listen to the English language
No,
Serie A
but I
commentary.
actually like him. Actually, I know who he is. I like him. I
Yeah.
follow him.
And I think he's put up some translations of clips of it. But what's really interesting is seeing how emotional Di Lorenzo gets talking about becoming captain, about talking about the city, about talking about the team. And I think, again, just to think about how Calzona makes us feel as fans, it feels more connected into the spirit of the club. And for me, Di Lorenzo can play badly. I'll still back him, actually, I think. I don't think he's lost his ability to be a brilliant fullback. I think he's just knackered, I think. But I don't know. Am I an apologist?
that's fine. I will say that I will be honest and say that when he was appointed as Napoli's captain, I didn't agree with it because I didn't feel it was charismatic enough. I mean, I've changed my mind about that. It
Yeah,
showed
some of
that.
that footage of last season when he's giving speeches and
Yeah,
stuff, I was
no, it's
really
great.
impressed.
I think it really, like, clearly Spalletti saw something in him that we couldn't see. I don't think anyone would have picked Di Lorenzo to become captain before he became captain, at least,
But also
among
post
us
Insigne,
fans.
I
Yeah,
think after
exactly.
Insigne in particular, he went for a very different
Yeah,
personality, I
I
think.
think all of us would have picked maybe Rui. I don't know. But yeah, no, it's funny because I remember Spalletti said, Di Lorenzo will be the captain. The players have chosen him. And yeah, I didn't really believe it. Like, it was weird when he said that. I was like, oh, really? The players? Like, oh, that's interesting. But then after that, every time they had an interview and he was asked about becoming captain, he always said, oh, yes, Spalletti picked me. So it was Spalletti who actually picked him. I guess it was something like, guys, we have to pick a new captain. I would think Di Lorenzo would be good. Do you agree with me? Yeah, we agree. Okay, so it's decided. But it was basically Spalletti's pick. And I think it was a good pick. He clearly saw something that I didn't see. I guess you can tell he's a very professional player. In some ways, he's similar to Hamsik, which means that there is
Good
absolutely
shout, yeah.
zero drama coming from Di Lorenzo. He's very professional. I'm sure that he's the first one arriving at the training center, the last one to
Leading by
leave.
example, as we say,
Yeah,
leading
he's
by
probably
example.
even better than Hamsik in some ways because Hamsik, I feel, was very passive and quite silent most of the time, even though he did improve over the years, but he was always very like an introvert. I don't think Di Lorenzo is an extrovert, but I think that he understood very well the weight of the armband and he
See,
worked to become a good
this is
captain.
why Hamsik would be the perfect assistant coach, and
I
why
agree.
that has to happen. We have to
I
give
agree.
Calzona a 10-year contract and Hamsik a 10-year contract.
Why just 10 years?
I'm not being knee-jerk here, Michele, am I?
No, not at all. I mean, again, as I said, for me, any type of rationality has gone out the window with Mazzarri. I don't care anymore. I honestly, like, it's sad, but I don't really believe that we're gonna qualify to Champions League. At least,
No.
I don't know. Like,
Unless
as long
we
as
win
Mazzarri was
it.
here, I think it's very unlikely. I would say right now it's not impossible, but we have to win a lot of games, and we have very difficult games coming up. We have to play Milan against Inter. We have to play against Atalanta. We have to play against Roma. We're a very good Roma side. We have to
It'd be
play.
hilarious, wouldn't it, to burst De Rossi's bubble? There's
Exactly. So
some
it's a lot of
chippiness coming
wins. A
out of
lot of.
those Roma fans.
Yeah, what I've been saying, I was talking about this with my father. What I've been saying is that if we actually qualify to Champions League this season, then we've deserved it. Because right now we are so far behind the fourth place. And maybe the fifth place would be enough, but I don't think we can really think about that right now. I see it
I
as like
can't,
a
yeah.
bonus. So if
And the
we if we
maths is, yeah, I just
yeah,
don't understand it.
exactly. So if we win all the games we have to win and we finish top four, then we have absolutely deserved it, because we're gonna have to win very difficult games against extremely good sides and very informed sides to qualify to Champions League. So yeah,
But
let's
informed
see. It's
sides, you know, if you're in form, at some point you become out of form. And I think actually interesting with
fair.
both Ro with Roma and Bologna, they've been on quite a sustained period of good form, and at some point that's going to have to stop. That's the optimist in me thinking. There's one other thing actually about the Juve game I want to switch about before we maybe wrap things up, is you sent me a message. There was song sheets being handed out to ultras. There was a video that went semi-viral of the ultras rehearsing this chant somewhere, which I love the idea they're doing like a dress rehearsal as a theatre director. Very, very, very pleased about that. And I don't think it's a massive story, but I think it's just quite interesting. Like, what's going on with that? How come this is happening now, do you think? Or is
I
that just
think,
really normal?
I mean, in some parts it's normal because we have new chants almost every season. I think we've had so far, on the top of my head, I would say probably like three new chants this season. I mean, when I say new, I mean new in the curva, because sometimes there are chants which already exist somewhere else and they've been brought to curva, to the Napoli Stadium. Yeah, it's this basically this song, because it is a song. It's like, I would say it's half a song, half a chant. It's like a songified chant, or maybe a chanticized song, whatever you
Oh,
want to say.
nice.
But yeah, it's by one guy. I didn't know about it, but his name is Christian Bollaro or Vollaro, I don't know. And this guy used to be a Napolitan, like he died recently, but he was a Napolitan singer-songwriter. Apparently, because I've read some articles about it, because I didn't know him, he used to go around Napoli's historic center singing with his guitar, and he was very popular. He had an appearance on the national television, which made him somewhat famous. But yeah, he created this song, which I don't even think has a name. But yeah, he created this song about Napoli, about the team, the club. And a few years ago, I don't know when, but I've looked it up, and there are some like 7, 8 years old videos on YouTube with this song. So I don't think it's very new. And yeah, I already knew the song because I've listened to it in the past. Again, it's like it's a stretch to call it a song, but I mean, it's still a song. There's a guitar in the background, and yeah.
That'll
So
do.
for he died like a couple of weeks ago, I think, and for some reason, the Ultras decided to adopt this song from this guy and just promote it to stable chant in the stadium. So that's what they handed, and it was interesting to me because it was the first time I was handed a leaflet by ultras outside the stadium. Like, it's not rare that they hand leaflets inside the stadium. They usually leave it on the seats. If there is like a choreography, there is an well, usually it's about choreographies or like some important communication. But I was hanging out like before the game. I was at this bar, the usual bar where I go with some friends, and they literally came inside the bar at this three, four, five ultras, and they handed leaflets to everyone in it. They just kept going to every bar and restaurant. That was very interesting to me. It's the first time I see it happen.
Yeah.
And the leaflet just said, you know, this Christian Vollaro was a son of Naples. He wrote this song, and from now on, we're gonna sing it together in the stadium. And the other side of the leaflet had the lyrics of the song, which is just, you know, it's an interesting. I mean, it's nothing spectacular. I would say it sounds like a normal chant. I would say, you know, the average chant is not really rich when it comes to lyrics. It's just like usual, you know, score a goal, we want you to win, these kind of things. But this chant is actually quite nice. If you listen to the, if you read the lyrics, maybe I can post, we can post some, like a translation of the lyrics. It
That'd be
is quite
cool.
interesting. It's I mean, it's above average when it comes to chants. It's quite nice. I think it sounds nice. I had
But
some.
what's it about? What's it about?
No, it's just like it starts off with, again, it's like a normal chant, so it's not like a story. It just talks about the creation of Napoli, you know, the club, you know, in August one day it was raining. It talks about the colors. It talks about, again, it's not like a masterpiece, but I think it's good enough when it comes to chants. It sounds good. So yeah, I think I had a discussion with some friends because they didn't like it, but I think it's gonna be should be fine. It's quite long. We are not used to these long chants in Napoli. We usually they're quite quicker. It sounds like a South American chant. You know, they have this
Give us
chant
a
with a.
bit. Come on, give us a bit, Michele. Come
No,
on, come
no,
on.
man. No, come on. No. I don't even know it by heart because it's the first time we sing in
You
the
haven't learned your
stadium.
lines. I'm not happy with that if I'm
I did.
directing you.
No, I did. I was maybe one of the only ones who knew at least half of it. But again, as I said, it's quite long. They
What's it
chanted
called?
it. Again, I don't think he has a name, but if you Google Primo Agosto Pioveva, Christian Vollaro, then you're gonna find it. Because
Okay.
that's the first part, the first lyrics, the first words of the song. Primo Agosto Pioveva. It was the 1st of August and it was raining. So 1st of August is when Napoli was founded, the club. Primo Agosto Pioveva di Domenica era. So it's like 1st of August, it
Setting the
was raining, it
scene.
was Sunday. Yeah, exactly.
This is important. This is the Stanislavskian
No, I
fundamental
mean, I
question.
told you,
Where? For all
I
those
like it.
actors out there.
I like it. It was like, yeah, it was, we can, I mean, Agosto Pioveva di Domenica. It was raining. It was 1st of August. It was raining. It was a Sunday. And then it goes on saying, who, like, wool shirt and a ball and a football. And love was born because they used to play with very different shirts back then. It was like,
Yeah, I see
yeah,
the picture.
yeah. And then it goes on. I don't want to mention all of it because I said it's quite long, but it's like
Yeah, well,
just to give you an idea. It goes
we
on. It
can
says,
post
like,
it.
from the blue in the sky, Vesuvius in the background, and white, as we know, is its integrity. It's quite nice. I think it's. You know, like moral integrity. That's
I
the
love
idea
it.
behind it.
Go on,
You know, it's quite nice.
give us it in Italian then.
Primo agosto pioveva, di domenica era, ma in lana un pallone e nasceva l'amor dell'azzurro nel cielo, come sfondo il Vesuvio ed il bianco si sa e la sua integrità. And then goes on and goes on. You made me sing, man. You made me sing, like I never do it. But yes,
You
it
see,
was.
I get paid money for this shit, man. Like, you know, I get people to do things on
I can
stage.
tell. I can tell. I
It
can tell.
was good, man.
Yeah.
And I think
It
that
goes on. It goes on.
so keep your ears peeled, everybody, next time you're watching Napoli, if you're in the stadium or if you're at home.
I
That
think
is
the
a new
idea
chant.
is to chant it at the beginning of the game. So they chanted it twice at the beginning and almost like towards the end. Like at the very beginning was the first one, and they both Curva and B showed banners with, I think what was the banner? It was just the first words of the chant, I think, like Prima Agosto Pioveva, yeah. Prima Agosto Pioveva di Domenica era again, 1st of August. It was raining. It was a Sunday, so like just this banner, both Curva and Curva B, and I mentioned it in the past. It is very rare for Kurva and B to do things together. It's not like they hate each other. I get this question a lot. Like, what's the relation between Kurva and B? They are mostly independent. They obviously have to collaborate. They talk because they go when they go to away sections, you don't have away section A, away section B. They are together. They have their own banners. It's not like they are unified by just one banner. If you see like the away sections when we play away, you will see that they always have Kurva A, the banner, and they always have like some like either the Fedain banner, which is a Kurva B ultras group, or like some like usually the flags that you see are Kurva B flags, like the one that looks like sari that everyone still thinks it's sari, but
We got
it's
a
not.
question from Sam. Hi, Sam. Sam's great listener. She's been a long time supporter of the show. But yeah,
Yeah, that's not a sari flag.
this is not the so if there was a theme really of today and sort of the past couple of weeks, it's actually getting back to your roots as a club. You know what I mean? Like, it sounds weird because obviously Mazzari is a big part of Napoli's history, but there's, you know, bringing back didn't feel like that. Was actually having Calzona and can that sort of connecting to the DNA of the recent successes with Sarri, and you know, some of the performances coming back from some of the players, some of the ways of playing on the pitch seems to be this kind of return, and even the stands and the ultras are kind of having this slightly nostalgic chant that it's really interesting to think it goes back to the formation of the club. It's very different to the sort of stuff you'd get chanted in the UK as well, actually. And then we're all set up to play terribly against Torino and lose 7-0, and everyone can just.
After 100%, I don't want to think about that now. I don't want to think. It is nice that you know the first thing everyone said after we won against Juventus was like everyone was surprised. We were all saying like, "Oh wow, feelings again. We are feeling things again."
I
So
loved
you can
also that
actually do
winning
that.
goal, like the way they've chased up the penalty and stuff. There was just something very
Yeah.
swashbuckling about it, and Jack
Beautiful.
Raspadori is just like, you know, has had his flaws, but there's just something about the way he just pops up in these moments that I quite enjoy. Like, he's got a very expressive face. His face was hilarious when he scored. He just looked like someone had put electrodes on his nipples, you know. He really was like, ah. Anyway, okay, well, before we curse this next game anymore by being optimistic, shall we do you have a Neapolitan expression of the week for us, McKenna?
I do. I have a few actually because we haven't recorded in a while, and there are a few phrases that I wanted to mention. So, first of all, we said goodbye to Mazzarri, good riddance. Still, I don't think people here will hate Mazzarri for
No.
what he did. There's always going to be, I think people will always remember him for his first stint with us, not this one. This one was weird. It's sad that we tried to be optimistic when he came. That didn't work. And we tried to, I mean, the first thing I said when he came was, this club is a joke. But then I tried to be optimistic because we tried to avoid the negatives and only see the positives. That didn't work. That like only the negatives applied. It was a re basically a retired coach because he was on his way to Egypt, and yeah, he's basically on his way to retirement, if not already retired. So you know, to Mazzarri, I want to say that, you know, especially regarding the fact that from the first moment he came, he rejected his nature of being Mazzarros and his 352, and he adopted the 4-3-3, and he tried to convince everyone. He successfully convinced De Laurentiis, at least, that he would be good at playing the 4-3-3, Spalletti's 4-3-3. And yeah, he fooled him. He fooled us for a little bit, but in the end, that didn't work out. So my phrase of the week for Mazzarri is, chi nasce quadro non può morir tun. Chi nasce quadro non può morir tun. In Italian it would be, chi nasce quadrato non può morire tondo, which basically means, if you were born squared, you cannot die round. It's just a way of saying that it's not possible to change your nature, your like the deep nature of who you are. If you are born one way, if you're not gonna die another way. Again, we can argue with that because I think I do believe in change. In the case of Mazzari, he was squared and he wanted to be round, but at the end it wasn't round, so he didn't write round. He
But he was
was
too
squared.
tired
Be
to
exactly.
metamorphose, you know, he's too awful. I think, well, Brecht, the great German playwright and philosopher, 20th century, believed that consciousness can evolve and can change. And I think it is an optimistic view. But then who knows? Perhaps that is a debate for another podcast, McKenna. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe,
Nat
maybe.
nature, nurture. Are you? It's fine. I'm not going to put everyone
Yeah,
off with an academic seminar here.
I have my opinions about that, but regarding Mazzari, it was very clear that he really tried to be something that he wasn't. And yeah, that didn't work at all.
And actually, his only
Regarding
success was when it was the semi-final of the Supercoppa, where he went back to being himself.
Exactly. That's interesting, no? I mean, he still tried with the 3-5-2, but again, and maybe it also applies to the club, the team, because a team that is born to play 4-3-3 cannot be changed in a way that makes a 3-5-2 successful. And even though it was successful for just literally one game, in the end, I don't think it's very smart to fight your nature. And the nature of this team is not to play defensively, like we tried to play with Mazzarri, but is to play offensively, like we are trying to play with Calzona, even though we are having a lot of mistakes on
And if
defensive
you,
plays,
yeah,
but we're trying, we're trying.
if you play three at the back, you need Rui Kroos, Libero, or Alessandro Rennica. You don't need Juan Jesus.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, that's a good point. And
Okay, he's
regarding
actually
Calzona,
he played all right. I get you. Sorry, yeah. Regardless, we've got two.
well,
Wow, two for the price of one.
yeah, even though I didn't like Juan Jesus against Juventus, but that's gonna be maybe we're gonna mention another time. That post that Vlahovic hit, that was hot Juan Jesus' fault. And if he scored there, Juan Jesus would have been crucified. Jesus
That's
would have
true.
been crucified once again and deservedly so this
Well,
time. So
coming up to Easter, so yeah, very
yeah,
appropriate.
exactly. So I would say, and the other phrase of the week is a little bit more optimistic because we're all feeling more positive right now after Calzona has joined, even though it might be nothing, but we're feeling optimistic because otherwise we go crazy because this season
Absolutely.
has been madness, pure madness, makes no sense, worst title defense in the history of Serie A, blah blah blah. So yes, the
What is your
phrase this,
tester?
yeah, that's I mean, I think you can tell I'm going a bit crazy, but the second phrase of the week is a little more optimistic, and is the phrase is Esho sole esquaglia neve. Do you understand this?
Give it to me in Italian.
Esce il sole e si squaglia la neve.
Something about the sun going and the sea. I no, the snow. Neva.
Yes,
Yeah, the sun and the snow. Something about the sun and the snow.
exactly. So it means that now the
But the
sun
sun
is
melts the
out
snow.
and the snow is melting. It's just a way of saying that, you know, the good times are in front of us. Hopefully, I can see a ray of sun coming through the clouds. The meaning is just like never despair because everything can turn out well. And you know, I don't want to be optimistic once again. I went to look at the first
You
articles.
soppy bastard, you sentimental
Yeah, no, I don't want to
Neapolitan
say that.
McKenna,
I
come
just
on.
like I found it funny that if you read the article that they're coming out now, it's like they're like, oh yeah, the players are happy again. They are smiling. They are finally happy. But I had a deja vu feeling when I read this, and I went and looked on at the articles that came out when Mazzarri came, and they were exactly the same.
Of
Oh,
course.
finally the players, because the first game was against Atalanta and we won, and
Oh
you
yeah, I
know,
remember all those pictures of training and everyone was smiling. They were like, look, it's
yeah.
all different.
Yes, finally they're happy again, smiling again. So it means absolutely nothing to me when I read
Torino
these
six,
articles.
Napoli one. Yeah,
Yeah.
great. Well,
But
thank
we'll
you for
see.
two Neapolitan expressions. You're spoiling us, McKenna. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Do come and find us on the old Twitter at Shadow of Vesuvio. Michele is on there professionally is at Napoli Tickets. But in his personal capacity is at Michele GNT. I'm at Henry Bell Calcio. We're a proud member of the Far from Vesuvius network, at Far from Vesuvius. A little bit of admin, the Glasgow Napoli group are meeting on Tuesday for the Barcelona game. If you're in Scotland or Glasgow and you fancy hanging out with some super cool Scottish people and an English idiot like me, we've got a room booked somewhere really nice in the middle of Glasgow. So just drop me a DM and you'd be more than welcome to come join us. But yeah, glad to be back. I'm out of my busiest time of year at work, so we hopefully will be back to the regularity that we had at the beginning of the year. Cheers, Michele. Take care,
Grazie.
everybody. And Forza Napoli.
Sempre, Forza Calzona.